This is State of the Union on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. and we rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We are also now available on podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are continue to be more ways to stay in touch with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can check out our website online at www.dc37.net. And every month, keep a lookout for your union newspaper, the Public Employee Press, in your mailbox. And if you have anything you want to say about this show or anything else that you'd like to get in touch with us about, drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We've got a good show this evening. Later on in the program, Assemblyman Daniel O'Donnell will be on to talk about his bill to institute a progressive income tax on wealthy New Yorkers to fund the deteriorating New York City subway system, and also offering half-price Metro cards for low-income riders. That's in the second part of the show. But right now, we're talking to an old friend, someone who we was on this show back in March. She is an author. She's also a member of DC 37 Local 375, and she works at CUNY's Borough of Manhattan Community College. Anita Samuels, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
I remember when we did this show about 6 months ago, and you were talking about your book, which is called Rants and Retorts, How Bigots Got a Monopoly on Commenting About News Online. It's a mouthful, but Rants and Retorts. It was about the noise that's out there on news outlets, websites, I guess, right? On the comment section.
Yeah, online comments in response to news stories. Right.
And I have seen you all over social media in the months since, and I've seen you appearing on other shows, and I'm wondering how the issue, since you first started talking about, not that we were the first people that you were talking about it with, but in the 6 months that have gone by, there seems to be a lot of attention onto this issue of hate speech online. And why don't you tell us again why you wrote the book and what's been going on?
Well, I wrote Rants and Retorts to shine a light on online commenting, specifically hate speech. Rants and Retorts is specifically about the hate speech against African-Americans and people of color. However, the issue is much larger than that, as you know. You know, sexism, you know, homophobia, all these things. So what I found is that every day there are several news stories about online commenting in some way, shape, or form. And it's just been interesting that the conversation about this book can carry over for a long time, I think.
Now,
you know.
Well, here's the thing. The first question I have is, when we talk about this online commenting, are we actually talking about people who are putting their names and faces to the comments, or are we talking about anonymous angry voices? And are angry, hateful voices usually anonymous?
Well, we're talking about both because, again, to be anonymous, you still don't necessarily have to use your real credentials, your real name.
You have your handle.
Fake avatars, right. And it could also be a, you know, bots, you know, online responding to, you know, any number of news stories online. So you don't even know if it's a real person who has said these negative things.
Now, have the news outlets gotten, in your mind, better about what shows up in their comment feeds?
To some degree, but I don't know that it can really be done with, you know, with such accuracy, because it's hard to contain this. You know, if there are human moderators, which is rare because, you know, a lot of news organizations don't have enough staff to have someone sit and literally read through these comments, you know. And if it's a filter that they're using, you know, Discus or, you know, this artificial intelligence that by Jigsaw, which is through Google, that the New York Times is using, it's still hard to say that the comments won't be offensive. It seems to that there are so many more stories now about online software companies trying to get into the minds of why trolls, online trolls, you know, write what they write. You know, so they're trying to justify, you know, why people do this. And it's kind of, I don't know how it's going to work out, honestly.
Well, but you're saying that there is technology that is trying to capture hateful speech online?
They're trying to stop it.
Right. So
by developing software to find out who, you know, who these trolls are, why trolls write what they write, that kind of thing. There's been more of that.
Is that kind of
tremendous amount
based on the words that appear in the comments?
Yes, filters.
So if the N-word appears in a comment, somebody there's an automatic pull out of that comment? Is that how that works?
Yeah, but it's going to be before it gets posted onto, you know, whatever site it is. Yes.
So this problem, you know, the phenomena of, you know, in the world we live, in the free speech world in which we live, the battle between I have a right to say and, you know, and when you're not doing it, when you're speaking hatefully, there are limits as to what you should be able to express. How do you think we came to be in this place? Where was this just a natural byproduct that there are bad people out there, or there are people out there who are angry, or the people out there who are pissed off, and they're just making noise about there's always been the other, and that this was a natural extension of the way people feel?
To some degree, this platform, the online platform, has allowed people to be able to project this more. The thoughts may have been in their head all this time, and now there's a platform. So this kind of helped it along. Not to say that it didn't exist before, but now it's like, oh, wow, I can do this, and I don't have to put my real name. This is how I feel. I'm exercising my free speech. You're actually exercising your freedom of expression, but, you know, to what extent does that go, really? And how does it really help, you know, especially if you're attacking people, you know, based on race and all these different things? You know, it just makes it worse, I think.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten on the book since its publication?
Well, I find that people say that they have to keep stopping. They read and they stop because they get so angry about what they're reading, you know, and they get upset that, you know, this is being allowed to be out in the world. And, you know, some people, they just get really angry.
You know, something I should have asked you right from the front. How did bigots get a monopoly on commenting about news online?
Well, they were allowed to simply by this platform of allowing comments to news stories.
So your premise is that people should have thought about this before they created the outlet.
They should have considered, yeah, what could happen. And I don't think that they were ready for the backlash that they received, because it's like, okay, well, these aren't really our words. We're going to let readers say what they want, but, you know, we're stepping away from it. We're not saying that we agree with them. But that's not how it worked out, because when people started reading them, they're like, well, oh, well, wait a minute. This was posted on, you know, the Daily News and the New York Times, so they must be complicit in these thoughts. And that's when advertisers started, you know, feeling some kind of way. You know what I mean? Especially if it was something, a topic that was highly controversial.
And the most important message that you're trying to get out about this is what? What is it that you want folks to come away with?
Well, I'm finding that a lot of organizations are shutting comments down still. A lot of news organizations have just, like MSN, they didn't make an announcement about it, but they did. And they didn't say why, really, but it's probably because of this. Because, you know, it's hard to correct, you know, the problems that happen with online commenting. But overall, the book was to let people know what's really going on out there. And even though we know that commenting is not going to leave, it's not, you know, but to be more mindful of what you yourself put out there, and be mindful of what others are putting out there. Keep reading, fight back, if you need to, if you can stomach it, I say.
So you're calling upon readers to sort of balance out the comments, or to give voice to, to voices of hope as opposed to voices of anger or despair or
bigotry?
Right.
If something's wrong, like especially, the stereotypes about, African-Americans, and you have, some truth, go back in and say, hey, this isn't true, and here's the reason why, which is similar to the pattern that I took in the book. To say, okay, this many people, African-Americans collect welfare or whatever, and let, well, no, you know what? That's not quite right. Statistics, the actual statistics are such and such and such and such. And you see a lot of that, people trying to fight back. But then, the nastiness gets worse when, the name calling and the N word and, the B word and all the other stereotypes. So, you kind of get drowned out. And then people like to pile on,
And do you think that there's a connection between the presidential election and the proliferation, and I mean that in the most serious way in terms of the anger with which, the civility of debate seems to have gotten lost somewhere in the last few years.
True. I think it existed before. The difference between the current troll in the White House is that he's flaunting the fact that he can do it, and he doesn't care that everybody knows that he's doing it. Other trolls online might not be that open, but they may, speak the same type of words, speak in the same language and tone, and be very aggressive like that. And I think it sets a poor example for our young people, because it says, well, if the most powerful man in the world can do this, we can do it too.
And one of the lessons of the book, though, is about the need for civility as we use the internet and as we go, as we're talking online with each other.
Don't be a contributor to the problem.
Anita Samuels is the author. The book we're talking about is Rants and Retorts, How Bigots Got a Monopoly on Commenting About News Online. She is a member of DC 37, of Local 375. She works at CUNY's Borough of Manhattan Community College, where you're a facilities coordinator, correct?
That's right.
And you've been, but you are a journalist, and you've been a journalist for many years.
Yes.
You're feeling that this book has gotten the message across. You're happy with the reception to this book.
I am, because almost everyone can identify.
Absolutely.
As I've been making the rounds, with Sandra Bookman on WABC TV with Here and Now. I was on NPR's All Things Considered, The Barbershop, with Michelle Martin. Most recently on The Road to City Hall, interviewed by Errol Lewis on New York One.
He's a good man.
Yes.
And we are thrilled to always give you an opportunity to have to tell your story and to help you get the message out of your book. We've just run out of time.
Wow.
but
wow.
You will come back soon, and we'll talk about more of this. And listen, have yourself a good luck on the book. Good luck as always.
Thank you so much.
And talk to you soon. We'll be right
bye-bye.
Back. Okay, bye-bye.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Thank you.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. Our next guest is Daniel O'Donnell, who was elected to the New York State Assembly in 2002. He's been a progressive voice advocating fair and sensible legislation since that time. He's got a very interesting background. He was a lawyer at the Legal Aid Society. He was fighting for against employee discrimination and for housing. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about this bill that you have proposed or is in, now to help deal with the subway crisis. We were pleased to be part of the mayor's press conference recently in which your bill was pushed along with the idea that there should be the Metro cards for poorer New Yorkers. Let's talk about how this is a solution. Let's talk about the bill itself, what it proposes, and how this is a solution to the problems that we're facing.
In my term of office, which has now been 14 years, it is clear, has become very clear to me, that the problem with MTA is the funding, and that you can pour as much money as you want into whatever it is, but unless there is a dedicated funding source that says this money is to be used for this purpose, we're never going to get anywhere. What we're experiencing now, people have referred to as the summer of hell, is that, you know, ongoing regular maintenance and upgrade of the system, of the infrastructure system, has not been the priority. Obviously, it's wonderful to open a new subway line and have a big ceremony and cut a ribbon. No one's cutting a ribbon when you're replacing wires underground or replacing the signaling system because it's not sexy. And so that stuff often takes a back seat to more glamorous, more, you know, let's go to the West Side, you know, projects. So what we need is a dedicated funding source, i.e. revenue, that is specifically sent for the purpose of maintaining and maintenance and upgrading of the operational systems. And that's what the bill does.
And now how – and now this bill is also co-sponsored with Senator Michael Gianaris, state senator.
Yes.
And how much revenue do you expect to raise from this?
$800 million a year. It would be a very small increase on people who make more than $500,000 a year in their income tax. And it would be $800 million a year is what our estimate is would come from that amount of taxation.
And to those who say this is class warfare?
Well, that's just simply ridiculous. I mean, if you look around the world, we have one of the least progressive tax systems in the Western world. If you go to places like France and you know, in this Sweden and other places, the rich pay a much, much higher percentage of their income. The reality is New York City is a world-class city. It needs a world-class transportation system. If you own a business that your employees are taking the IRT to get to, you need to ensure that they get there in order for you to continue to make the profits that you make. And so in the end, it's not class warfare. It's simply saying we all have a different ability to pay, and we're going to have some people pay just a little bit more.
It always reminds me when I see somewhere in the paper somebody talking about class warfare, I am reminded of the Warren Buffett quote, which says, there is class warfare, all right, and it's been declared by my class, the rich class, and we're winning. So
they certainly are, and there is certainly no lack of, you know, $10 million apartments in the city of New York. And obviously somebody is buying them and somebody is living in them. And those people seem to me ought to be able to give a little bit more. That's what this theory is. And it's not a new theory, but the new part of it is the dedicated funding source for it that's purpose specifically delineated. And Senator Gianaris and I have been great partners in trying to come up with this solution.
I just want to talk to you a little bit more about the analysis of how we got here. Is this because are you saying that there are sexier projects within the MTA that they would rather do than the maintenance of the system itself, or because the money was going actually outside of the MTA and was going to to fund other things?
Unfortunately, there have been examples of money in the MTA being removed from the MTA and used for other needs in the state of New York. that, A, should stop. Senator Gennaris and I have a bill that would stop that. Secondly, there are things that are sexier than others. There are some things that generate more media attention than others. There are some things that generate a lot of public interest than others. You know, where I live uptown on the west side in Morningside Heights. You know, when we had the 103, 110, 116 stations were renovated in my tenure. I didn't do that, but the MTA had decided for the 100th anniversary of those stations that they were going to renovate them. The stations are okay. There are stations that are not okay, right? But in the end, you know, how good your station is not as important as does it get you to work on time. You know, and in the last decade, the 2 train, which is what I took to the press conference in Brooklyn,
right.
You know, its on-time ratio went from 82 to 38%. And so that's a very telling statistic about what's happening for people who have to rely on that system to get to and from work every day. And as I also mentioned at the press conference, I'm the chair of the Arts and Tourism Committee and in the Assembly, and tourism in the state of New York is an $8 billion a year industry. Let me repeat that. $8 billion. If
right.
people are coming to New York City and they can't get around, they may stop coming to New York City. And so we have to ensure that people in the city of New York have the ability to move around through public transportation. And this bill is trying to address that.
I still get, I have a New Yorker's, I still get excited when I have the opportunity in the subway system to. Folks speaking German, holding the maps, have no idea where they're going. If I can help them, point them to the.
Oh, I do it all the time. I walk up to pure strangers and said, "Hi, I'm an elected official here. Can I help you?"
Yes, because
you... really. And sometimes, you know, when I'm riding, particularly if I'm dressed in a suit and I'm riding the subway or riding a bus, and I run into constituents, they're like, "You take the bus?" And I'm like, well, the best way to get there is the bus. I, you know,
right.
so, but particularly on the subways, you know, they have this image that, you know, I'm driven around in a chauffeur car, which
right.
I can assure you I'm not.
Right.
So.
Well, and let's be clear that no matter what happens in terms of the renovations of the much needed renovations, this is not going to be easy on folks getting back and forth to work. I mean, to repair this massive monster system, it's going to take some discomfort on the part of all of us, yes, to get the thing fixed at the end of the day.
Well, certainly, as you know, when they do track renovation or they do things and they close them for the weekend or they do alternate stops, I mean, there is inconvenience. Generally, try to have the inconvenience not during rush hour and not during the work week. Having said that, yes, there will be some of that, but the purpose is to keep it so that in 2022 and 2032, people can still rely on the New York City subway system as the mechanism to get around. And, you know, you look at the increase in population and the increase in ridership of that system, you've got to know that it's integral to the survival of our city.
And what do you think the reaction has been from colleagues in Albany? I mean, how hard is it going to do to push this?
Well, look, I've had some success in some hard things. I passed marriage equality when everyone told me I could not.
Right.
It is not an easy place to work, and it's not an easy place to get things done. This is a conversation starter. The key to this whole thing is dedicated revenue source. And so, you know, if somebody wants to come along and say, rather than do it this way, we'll do it this other way with a dedicated revenue source, then maybe we'll get to that place. But in the end, this is forcing people to confront what's in front of them. And what has happened in the last 4 months is what is happening underground in New York City has been on everybody's mind and everybody's lips. And I think that is going to drive and force electeds who may be uncomfortable with whatever the solution that we get to, that they're going to be forced to confront that because people are very unhappy for a very legitimate reason. And those of us who are old enough, who were here in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, and remembered what it was like when, you know, the trains were so unreliable, we cannot go back to that. We have to make sure that the system is growing, but the system is continuing to function for the people who rely upon it every day.
You know, I remember when you first ran in 2002, and I ask this of all elected officials who come on this show. Your commitment to public service began when and how? And how much of it over the years, how do you keep it going is what I guess I'm asking. And I know this is a terribly unfair thing to ask someone.
No, that's okay. It's perfectly okay. Here's the thing. When I was a little boy, the day Robert Kennedy was shot, I was 7 years old. And I woke my mother up and told my mother, and she burst into tears. And I had never seen my mother cry because I was a boy. Adults don't cry.
Right.
And I thought, who is this person and why is he important? We've never met him, so why is he important? So my sixth grade book, when they said, what career do you want? I wrote politics as a sixth grade. Okay?
Yeah.
So I then, you know, went to Washington to go to college because it was Washington. I worked as an intern on Capitol Hill and, you know, came back to New York to go to law school and didn't think I could be in politics because I was gay. And there were no gay politicians. Barney Frank at the time was in the closet. I knew him. So there were no gay politicians. So I didn't really think that that was an option available to me. And so my public service was going to be in law. So I went, became a public defender, and spent 7 years where I got quite the lesson. This chubby guy from Long Island got quite the lesson about urban life in the 80s during the crack years. And, you know, it helped form a particular worldview. It helped teach me what the systems of our society, when they're working and not working. And then, lo and behold, you know, being gay wasn't necessarily a ultimate impediment to running for office. So I ran for the state Senate in 98 against Eric Schneiderman, our now attorney general, and lost, and ran 4 years later and won and became the first openly gay man to be serving in the New York State Assembly. So, you know, and when I got there, I thought, well, you could never run for higher office because there are no gay congressmen, there are no gay senators, there are no gay governors. And that has changed as well, too. So all that's good. It's hard to stay in it sometimes. It's hard with the nature of political discourse these days and the threats and the derogatory things that are said to people like me. I have a very strong support system. I have a fabulous husband, and I continue to fight.
Assemblymember Daniel O'Donnell, whose district is Manhattan Valley, Morningside Heights in the Upper West Side, the 69th District. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
All right. We're just about out of time. I want to thank Anita Samuels, who is a local 375 member, the author of a book called Rants and Retorts. Anita will be appearing at the Bronx Documentary Center on August 19th at 6 p.m. She will also be at the Sisters Uptown Bookstore at 5 p.m. on August 26th. To find out more, go to her website, AnitaMSamuels.com. A couple of announcements. Join the DC 37 family at Harlem Week, Sunday, August 20th at noon. That's on 135th Street between Malcolm X and Frederick Douglass Boulevard. For details, call 212-815-1500. Saturday, September 9th, join our family at the Labor Day Parade. Members will assemble at 8:30 a.m. at West 44th Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. For details, call 212-815-1550. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.